Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, Rob, Chris and Kenny, how are you?
Hey, Chris and Kenny, how are you?
Hello. Doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, wonderful. We've got a beautiful morning here in Florida.
Well, it we are countering that with a chilly morning up here in the Northeast.
Unfortunately, you're supposed to get some weather, I think.
Yeah, tomorrow it's supposed to be warm, but last night it was close to freezing.
Oh, really? That's crazy.
But 70 tomorrow, we'll take that.
Yeah, that's really nice. It's kind of that schizophrenic time of the year where you get out the golf court clubs and then you get out the snow shovel, you know? It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's
true.
And my dad is enjoying Bonaire, but he is not enjoying the network connection issues. So I don't think he's going to be joining us today. But I'll take notes, and since everything's recorded and that feature works nicely, I'll send him that link.
Great. So why don't we go ahead and report in on how we did for homework this week, finishing up. So that was the homework on week four.
Week four.
Yeah, we're actually in week four now. Is week five. This is week five. Yeah.
Are we behind on the videos? I thought I just watched the video for week four.
Okay.
Yeah, that we did. We just watched the video for week four.
Okay. So the power of full engagement, creating your own knit, your rituals for your success, etc. Jim Lehrer was a great mentor of mine, and I think what happened last week is we got a little bit astray from the plan, and I kind of relied on you guys to watch the video so that because I didn't have time to cover basically the chapter last week.
Okay.
Yeah, last week we worked on creating your ideal day, identifying your niches.
No, that's the video we watched for this week.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the video that Lori sent us for this week.
Okay, well, let me look at, make sure I'm not screwed up here. Okay, so... Oh, good. She didn't put down the week. All right. It's not critical that we be.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Like, we could go back and look at the calendar.
I think our first week was March 9th, which would make this week four.
Okay. 9th. I have the 9th, the 16th.
The 23rd, and today being the fourth week.
Okay. All right, okay. We didn't have last 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, this is the homework for week four. Okay. My notes are throwing me off.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Guys, I appreciate that.
No problem.
30th. Okay, good.
Yeah, we didn't touch the corporate athlete and the schedule, ideal schedule, and niches. We may have briefly touched on niches.
Right. Okay, so in terms of niches, the idea is that... We become more valuable to our client when we specialize in an area that they identify with.
Mm-hmm.
Now that could be any. It could be the company they work for. It could be the church that we go to. It could be our country club. It could be a Mensa society. It could be anything that where people congregate together and identify with each other, affiliate. So most of us have natural affiliations, and when we go through our top 20, 30, or 40 clients, we figure out that they came from a particular niche. All right, so they might be private companies, they might be, you know, a individual company, Eli Lilly. Mm-hmm. It might be anything, but the idea is that once we identify what our natural niches are, then we may want to look and see what niches are available to us where those people in that niche make a lot of money.
Okay.
So at this point, what would you say are your natural niches that
You know, we were taking a look at that and looking at the top clients, and you know, we didn't really see a real natural niche, because I'd say, if anything, most of the larger accounts came from pre-existing relationships, all started with Eddie, you know, back in the 80s.
Well, you can kind of narrow them down. It came to one CPA relationship that my dad worked close with him, went and, you know, would have lunches with him, would get clients, and a lot of them you can stem back to his main guy at best, but that's not even that strong.
And he's, you know, he's not with us anymore.
But I would say that, I don't know, I don't think we have too strong of a presence with niches. My dad is developing one geographically. He's got his house, he lives pretty much full time now out on the east end of Long Island, in a relatively small community, but it's been sort of
gentrified for over the past couple of decades.
But it's sort of been exploding. And there's just been a lot of people who vacation out there from the city, who've got a lot of money, a lot of artists, musicians, bankers retire out there. It's just, it's tending to attract a lot of people with wealth who are getting involved in the community. And my dad's been getting on a couple boards, and now we've taken out like an ad in the Suffolk Times. And people are starting to talk to him about what he does and saying they didn't realize he did that. So he's sort of got like a geographic niche that he's just sort of starting to – he's had the presence for a little while, and now he's starting to try and transition into informing them of what he does. And so that one's still just sort of being cultivated. But other than that, I haven't ever established a niche for myself. I've went, you know, trying to go through the exercise of identifying one, or maybe picking one, like you said in the video. But I think that's about where we're at with niches.
What did you come up with? Anything, Chris?
Well, for me, I was a member of a cathedral near me in Garden City, which is a wealthy area. And I did it from when I was 6 until I went to college, and I still continued after I came back. It was like 22 years I was in the cathedral. Now, I haven't been as involved recently, just because I've been busy with work and just moving around on the weekends. It's hard to get there every Sunday. But I know I've looked it up with my dad, and like I know people who worked for – it's like the main branch for the entire Episcopal Diocese of Long Island, and so they actually have an account that's like, I don't know, it's like $100 million that is like all in, I think, Access or Money Managers, and it's like all public information. It's on there, and I actually know someone who could put me in touch with that guy. Now, I don't know if that's an account or a niche. I haven't like fully fleshed out the whether or not there's going to be multiple opportunities there with qualified relationships, people who've got assets and things like that. But I would think it's got some potential. That's one. And then I just came up with another one as I was watching the video talking about niches where you said maybe you could pick one. I realized that I know a lot of people who work at PricewaterhouseCoopers, several cousins, my girlfriend works there. It's like five or six people who I'm very close with, and the people at PricewaterhouseCoopers who have made it this long, they tend to get paid very well. They work very hard. They've got decent-sized 401ks. A lot of times they will, after a number of years making good income at PwC, they will switch to get a better balance, and they usually wind up getting better hours and higher pay when they switch. And one of my cousins is an HR manager, so it's like you said, get to know the HR issues really well. I figured that one would be a good one to explore. So those are my two, stabs at it.
All right.
Okay. And for myself, I don't really have a natural niche. I started here 17 years ago. Prior to that, I was a geologist for about 4 years. And I really don't have much contact with that part of my life anymore. But as far as targeting something, the only thing that really came to mind was possibly Verizon employees. We've had a couple of successful Verizon accounts, people leaving Verizon with much larger retirement plans than I thought was possible for people who worked at Verizon. And I have at least two relatives who work there, so that could be an in, or I could just, really just start to focus on that.
It's interesting. Those are good. You guys are fine. Now, here's what you should do. You should build a business plan around these ideas, right? So you want to create a folder for each one and then kind of write out a plan. And here's what should be in the plan. You want to develop a center of influence inside your niche. And then you want to meet with that person monthly. Now, your first try may not be successful in terms of the center of influence. but my recommendation would be that, Richard Wileman used to say, out of sight, out of business. So you want to be in front of these centers of influence on a regular basis. Your dad's example of, Chris, your dad's example of...
Kenny's dad.
Yeah, my dad's been gone 36 years. Hey, if you've seen him, let me know.
All right, right. Okay. His example of working with a CPA and getting a great deal of the clients from that CPA should be an inspiration and a clear understanding of how to build a center of influence for you guys, because it clearly worked, all right?
Right.
And, he built it. Basically what you said was he built his whole practice around one CPA. Well, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually a lot of cold calling back in the day.
right, which we don't, we just don't do that anymore. So the
reality is,
no. So we got to do niche marketing. We got to, do centers of influence. Now, here's what I would recommend just off the top of my head as your consultant on these particular niches, just quick without knowing an awful lot. On the cathedral, I would suggest, Chris, that you make a plan to become a deacon in the church. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And so the idea is that you get involved. I wouldn't go after the
large
$100 million at this point.
Right.
You've built a good relationship based on 22 years. You have history that nobody else has. I mean, very few people have that kind of history. They're always looking for young, enthusiastic people to get involved with the church. And so it's a natural niche for you. You liked it, you did it forever, and if you're interested, it's got to be
right.
Something you're actually interested in. But this would be, quote, one of your community involvement. So it's a niche, but it's more like a board of directors, like what your dad is doing. What Ken's dad is doing in terms of board of directors in Suffolk. Okay, so I want you to be on two boards, both of you on two boards eventually. Now, sometimes when you're young, you can't get on a board immediately. You have to be, just engaged, and you make your institution. So you make a business plan with the idea of, okay, I'm going to become president of the board. And the reason you do that is because people come to me all the time and say, look, I've been on this board for 7 years. I've never gotten an introduction or referral. And I say, you know what? You may not have earned it. They say, what do you mean? I go to all the meetings. No, that's not what they're going to value, all right? What they're going to value is somebody that is really committed and wants to become president and really wants to make a difference. So you get on the board. In your case, you go to church. You start to read. You do get involved with the vestry eventually, and then you become a deacon. And then people will admire you, and you'll have a lot of friends, and it's a natural thing. It's not just going to church.
Right.
Most people get on boards and they basically just go to church. Well, that you're never going to get anything from that. You got to get involved. All right. And so if you're not going to want to do that, don't do it at all. I mean, go to church. That's for you.
But, right.
Don't plan on it being getting anything out of it unless you really commit. And that's the difference. Some people, like your dad, met with the CPA all the time, and that's how he won. I have people that have built 30, 40, 50% of their business through boards of directors, but they're very intentional about it. It's called unconsciously competent. They're very good at what they do, but they don't know what they're doing. They just do it. This one gal, I studied her because she got 40% of her business from boards. She didn't even know she was doing that until we went back and looked at her practice. But I guess I get all my business from these boards that I'm on, because there was no niche. It was just a bunch of different people. And I said, there's got to have something in common. Well, they're all on the board. Well, what did you do? Well, I was on the board for about 7 years. I'd get on the board. I'd get on a committee. I'd become head of the committee, and then I'd become vice president, then I'd become president, and then I'd rotate off. And I said, you just did that around the community. Yeah. Well, her family owned the brokerage firm, and so that was one of the things they did for the community. They were very engaged in the community. And that's the way you've got, to me, that's the way you got to operate.
Mm-hmm. I just thought of another niche for myself, but go ahead.
Go ahead. What's the other niche?
The other niche, I didn't even think about it. My father-in-law, who is retired, was the number three man at Shearing Plough.
Schlumberger?
Schlumberger, sorry. I just wrote down the ticker for Shearing Plough, for Schlumberger.
Wow.
So I'll see how I can possibly develop that, with him, obviously. I'll talk to him about it.
Well, my brother, his son-in-law is a works for Merrill Lynch, and my brother-in-law, my brother, has been probably his biggest advocate as a center of influence in his community. So it's really your father-in-law that becomes the center of influence inside that niche.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the way you do this, guys, all right? So we're intentional about where we want to go, and we want to become the expert in the world on that subject. But the first thing you got to do is you meet with the potential center of influence inside the niche, and you ask them a question. I'm thinking about building my practice around former Schlumberger executives or present Schlumberger executives. Do you think that's a good idea? And listen, because
uh-huh.
it may not.
Right.
No. All right. But in this case, I think it pretty much is, if you can do it. And he says, yeah, I think it's a great idea. All right. If you were me, how would you go about it?
Okay.
This is really important. This is what we call the advice model. All right. So you got to really say it exactly the way I said it.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, do you think it's a good idea? And second, if you were me, how would you go about doing it? And listen and take notes. And listen and take notes and probe. What else? What else? What else? What else?
Mm-hmm.
What else? Because you have no clue how to do it right now at this point. But
correct.
They know exactly how to do it.
Mm.
And they're going to, it's the single most important thing you can do in terms of making another person feel valued is to ask their advice. It's the most powerful thing you can do. And so to
mm-hmm.
ask your father-in-law how, you know, if he thinks it's a good idea, and then how would he go about it? Wow, you've never asked him for advice, probably.
Right.
And so this is a great thing. It'd be good for your
mm-hmm.
relationship, and it would be good
yeah.
to learn and listen. And so that applies to each one of these niches. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you go to your PricewaterhouseCooper friend, and you say, whoever you choose to be your, it could be three people could be your centers of influence. And you could try
right.
it out on each one of them. I'm thinking about building my practice around PricewaterhouseCooper executives. Do you think it's a good idea? Yes. If you were me, how would you go about it? And you, they'll help formulate your plan, your whole business plan.
Right.
Listen. And probe. What else? What else?
Mm-hmm.
What else? Okay? So that's
okay.
Any time you're thinking about taking on another niche, that's the way you do it. You're going to hear the advice model consistently through all of our acquisition strategies. So keep it in mind. It's always going, whenever I say, okay, what do you think would be the next step? You can pretty much turn and say, I might use the advice model here.
Right.
And it probably will apply. Because
okay.
whenever you get
okay.
stuck, okay? So this is a really valuable thing, guys. This is a really wonderful tool and will, if you use it consistently, it's one of the best-selling skills tools you can ever learn. And it helps in everything, every part of your relationship with anybody on any subject. So it's very, very helpful. Any questions on that, on the advice model, on niches?
No, I don't think so. I think I have to craft how I approach my father-in-law about this. I mean, we have a good relationship, but I've never asked him, you know, to, you know, give me referrals or anything like that. And I guess that's not what I'm really doing either. I'm not asking him to directly give me referrals. I'm asking for his advice as to how to approach it.
Exactly. And just keep yeah. in mind, you know, his daughter is probably the most important person in his life, you know. and helping her economically without giving her money is a really smart thing to do.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's not going to be, you're not going to be talking to a disinterested third party. This is a person that would like to help. You've never asked. You're not really asking for his help. You're asking for his advice. So always
Correct.
When you're in these situations, always rely on the advice model.
Yeah, good.
All right. Now, so again, so my homework for you would be to build these folders for each of these niches and start to put your business plan together and think about it, because I've given you the structure now of how to do it, the first meeting and asking for advice. And if you do it, you might as well go ahead and do this now. Do it this week, because it's, you know, worst case is they're going to tell you it's a bad idea. And so, good. Now we're off to the next project.
Okay.
And then when you get this information, you bring it back to me, and then I consult on it, all right? I'll give you some ideas on how best to go about it, you know, based on what they said. Is there anything from my experience that I could help on, or do you have everything that you need? And now it's just step 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this will give you the beginning of, so you can see how the center of influence thing combining with the niche gives you the beginning. So we want to be identifying potential centers of influence. And with the PricewaterhouseCoopers, they can be great centers of influence. Also, they can be centers of influence inside the niche for other PricewaterhouseCoopers people.
Wow.
So, you know, they can give you individual clients, or they can give you their associates. So either way, they're qualified. When we look for professional centers of influence, we look for people that we can refer to. And that's one of the differences. So, for example, the Shearing Plow Center of Influence, I mean, not Shearing Plow, but Schlumberger, we can't refer to them. Okay? But they can refer to us. So they would not make a professional center of influence.
Right.
So, you know, your experience as a geologist, I mean, with Schlumberger, I mean, that's pretty good. You know, you can.
Well, that's true too. He was an engineer. You know, by education. Granted, he moved on into management and really, you know, didn't pull on his engineering career. But yeah, definitely.
Are always going to other firms, Dresser and other, you know, there's always, you know, lots of, and that's a gold mine, that area. Now, today, with the market, you know, oil down a little bit, it's not perfect, but, you know, I've owned Schlumberger forever, and it's been a wonderful company. And it's premier in the world. And anytime you get access to a premier company that's, you know, dominates the market and as is in quote technology too, you got yourself a gold mine. Those people make a lot of money.
Oh yeah.
I think you've got some great niches, guys. So,
okay. Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah. No, you do, and you didn't even think you had them. There you go.
No, we kind of walked into this morning thinking, well, we really don't have much to, you know, to present here.
No, you're doing great. You have it. That's as good as I've seen. So congratulations. All right. So that's what I would now I think we're kind of out of time. That's unfortunately what happens every time. But I think we covered the most important thing. Which was these niches. The energy piece is that you can read. And for some people, you guys are young, so creating good rituals around your life, proper amount of sleep, exercise, and diet at this stage will pay off when you're my age. Still have good health. You'll have high energy for your whole career. You'll be less sick. You'll be healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So proper amount of sleep, exercise, and diet.
There's some changes I need to make in those all of those departments. So it's good for me to address that.
Well, read his book, The Power of Full Engagement. It's very compelling. I used to take guys down to see him every year, Jim Lehrer, so I know the subject intimately. Mm. It's been a part of my life forever, and it's been a part of why I've stayed, you know, relatively healthy my whole life,
mm-hmm.
with very high energy. So we're creating rituals around our business. We want to create those same positive rituals around our life. And so, you know, we say a lot of it is saying no to things, saying yes to other things. So, you know, it's displacement. You know, we're saying no to small accounts now. We're saying yes to big accounts. It opens us up for the opportunity to bring in big accounts. In this case, it's an opportunity to say no to bad, healthy habits and say yes to good, healthy habits. And you'll have good energy. You'll sleep better. People have trouble sleeping because they don't get enough exercise. They're eating the wrong things. They're eating too late.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, read that. Take advantage of it. And happy to answer any questions. I try and live it every day, and it pays off over time, not just in living longer, but in living better every day.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
All right, very good.
I had a quick question if you got time.
Sure, go ahead.
Just about sort of the stuff we were working on from last week into this week. I spent a lot of time sort of just kind of trying to type up sort of scripts around the five-star model.
Oh, good.
You know, we had the descriptions, and, you know, I had the other guys on the team try and think about what their roles would be and, like, what that would mean, and then got some feedback, and I tried to put it into, like, some scripts, which I did, and I need to go through some revisions and edits with the team. But we sort of approached that as using it for describing your team to a center of influence. Now, I get that part, but so when we're introducing Supernova to our current clients, you know, and we're excited, telling people the good news about the change we made, and they're going to be one of the, you know, first-class passengers, do we use the five-star model there as well? Do we start going into we introduce each VP role, or is it mostly like the service changes?
I think that would be too much.
Right.
For the typical introduction, I like to make it as short as possible and as succinct as possible. And if they have questions, you know, so I just simply go through the multi-generational planning with, you know, 12 scheduled appointments, full implementation of the model through 12 scheduled appointments, 4 reviews to them in person, rapid response to your problems, 1-hour response, 24-hour resolution. So, and then how does that sound? And they say, oh, that sounds unbelievable. How can you do that? Well, we can do that because we're having less than 100 clients.
Okay.
That's about all you really need to say when it comes to clients. They're interested in them and how this will impact them. Where
mm-hmm.
I would use it is in a presentation where you have a chance to bring a client into the office. In terms
okay.
of, if you're bringing a prospect into the office. So remember, any client can be eventually a center of influence. So
right.
if they really show an interest in your business and what you're doing, then you might, you know, do a quick, you know, a 3-minute version of, you know, each person giving a quick introduction of themselves, of what they do and how they do it. And then
okay.
if you have a prospect that's very large, bring them in and do the full-blown center of influence kind of presentation.
Right.
Focusing on benefits. Okay, so just
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, we've got that sparked another question in my mind. Like, we're meeting with a client today, and so we're going to, you know, sort of hone our skills on introducing it. So we'll kind of, we won't go into the five-star model unless for some reason it feels natural to go into that, but it'll mostly be the service. We do have some clients, though, that don't, like, we inherited them when someone else left, and they haven't necessarily been completely brought into the fold, but they like us. Like, for example, today, this guy doesn't have a financial plan. He's sort of got half our ideas, half the ideas that were here. So when we're talking about the service model, it's all is revolves around planning. This guy doesn't have a plan. Is there any sort of, like, tips or recommendations to how to broach all of this information without overwhelming him with, hey, we should start a plan. Hey, we got this new model, you know.
Right. Here's what I would do. The first three stars are the only thing that the typical client is interested in. A center of influence is interested in marketing and leadership. But a client typically is interested in the in-depth multi-generational planning, so that's the first vice president. They're interested in your risk management, asset management process, debt management process. That is your vice president of implementation. And they're interested in the service model, and that's your brand manager. So certainly, I think the three vice presidents can present in most any situation. You can present it yourself as this is how we operate, this is by yourself, or you could have three of you actually present it and with your titles and roles and how you do it. I think it'd be very impressive. I think it'd be really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good idea.
Okay, and so do we start a financial plan for, like, this guy who doesn't have one, and we broach that subject today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and always go into every presentation as if the client's going to say yes to everything.
Right.
It's kind of like our advice model, you know. Why wouldn't you do this? You know.
Mm-hmm.
No. Why wouldn't you do this? You know. Makes sense. We're willing to do the work. The value is there. Why wouldn't you do it? And they go, I can't think of a reason. So understand, you know, beforehand how you're going to do it, you know, how much you're going to charge. If you're going to charge, it's going to be not. If you're not going to charge, that's fine. But you want to make sure that you're going to get paid somehow, because neither you nor he will want to do this if there's no, you know, if there's no cost to him. He's not going to think it has any value. And if there's no benefit, if there's no benefit to you, you're not going to want to do it. All right. So that's why I prefer to charge, as it gets everybody interested. If he's paying for it, he's going to use it. It's like, you know, golf lessons or something.
Okay.
They're free. Nobody bothers with it. You got to pay for it, and they're expensive. You're going to go. Go to golf school. You're going to go.
Oh, yeah, we haven't ever charged for a plan before, but it's, you know, starting to make a little more sense.
I've just found that people that don't charge don't do many plans.
Right.
Okay. People that charge do plans and get all the money.
Hmm. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I was just with another team, that insurance company. They charge between $15,000 and $20,000 for their plans.
Wow.
Okay.
It just seems like a lot just because they seem so simple to do.
Yeah, I know, but
it's easy for me to say since Kenny's the VP of planning.
Right.
No, but sometimes it does feel like, you know, I can build these plans so fast if I have the information.
But how long did it take you to learn to build the plan? How long does a surgeon take to replace, you know, a heart or something? It can take 3 hours, but how long did he work to get to the place where he could do it?
Right.
He's not charging for the surgery. He's charging for his experience.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay?
Yeah.
Charging for the knowledge, the judgment. All you have to do is help him on one good decision, and it more than pays for the cost of the plan.
It's true.
I mean, just A-B trust, right? That's all, you know. All you have to do is get him to not pay the government on the, you know, second-to-die policy or something. I mean, it's just amazing how quickly we can create value for clients, managing his debt properly. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do to help. So don't underestimate your value.
Mm.
All right?
That's good stuff.
Have fun. Have fun.
All right, Rob.
Be courageous. Courageous. Have fun.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
We'll talk to you next week.